This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I was curious about the, when they did the movie with Kenneth. I mean, it was kind of almost like a pilot for Thor series in ways where he kind of set a specific look. And in this movie, it's obviously changing that look. And I was curious about coming into it and going into that knowing you're going to be changing the look in for this second movie.
Yeah, well, it's funny you use the word pilot. It's I spent a lot of time in television and I'm a recovering TV director or whatever, but a lot of the television experience has applied well here because there is an episodic quality to it, because it is volume two of something that's already been established. But like in television, I try and put my stamp on what's already been established and see what I can do to give it my sensibility a little bit. Ken's movie was very successful. He brought together an amazing cast, and he focused what could be a huge rambling mythology on very intimate family relations and brother versus brother, father and son. That was all brilliant. The only qualm I had with his movie was the look of it to me felt too shiny and too brand new. And I understand all the choices. It was basically because the Asgardians in that take were very much a futuristic alien race that we mistook for gods. And when I came in, I was in love with the Norse mythology. I was in love with sort of grounding it more in a kind of Viking, medieval look and a sort of a sense of history and weight and stuff like that. And Marvel seemed to have some interest in that as well. So coming off of Game of Thrones, where we sort of enjoyed combining fantasy with some sense of three-dimensionality and real life, that's what I tried to bring in here. It's a funny balancing act because you have to be funny in the way that Marvel's funny, and you have to be true to some pretty absurd things, like you guys saw elves in spaceships, or but then to try and make that relatable and real and textured and rich and stuff. So in Asgard, for example, we're seeing the back streets of Asgard rather than the shiny golden palace, and we go into some shiny palace rooms, but we tend to blow them up this time. And on Earth, it's it's London, and trying to capture a contemporary London, so that it, ideally, you can have the pleasures of something that feels real, but also all the joys that goes along with a Marvel movie. We'll see whether we're pulling off this combination or not.
Sorry.
Don't throw things.
And how you mentioned it, so becoming TV director, how different is a director of film as opposed to television?
I could go on and on. because it's partly direct, television versus film, but it's also, in my experience, HBO versus Marvel. And so I've been sort of spoiled on the TV end, because HBO is a small, it feels like a small institution, it feels like I'm making independent movies. There's respect for the director's contribution in a way that mainstream television doesn't really reflect, I don't think. And in Marvel, I came in expecting the worst. I had a friend who'd done a big studio movie that was also a sequel, and he emailed me at one point and said, "You have no idea, nobody here gives a flying F what I think about it." So I could have came in braced for that, but it's been very, very different. Marvel, in its weird way, also is a small group, a small institution, so it's like you're making an independent movie that just happens to cost multi-millions of dollars, but it's a handful of people in a room making the decisions. So that creative process is not that different. You're dealing intimately with the people that you're making the movie with. I haven't quite adjusted to the fact that they respect the director more in movies. I'm still used to deferring to somebody. And so it's been liberating and fun to have more input than I'm used to. But at the same time, this is a huge ocean liner, and learning when you can and can't turn the ocean liner.
That's scary.
Scary is a good word for it. Stressful. I've discovered new layers of stress I never knew existed. At the same time, the cast is wonderful. The crew is wonderful. I cannot complain about how I've been handled by Marvel, but yes, stressed, absolutely. It's there is a Marvel process where the script is sort of the last thing that you get. I come from a writer-driven medium where the script is the first thing you get, and then you get to do all your directing after that. And this one, they seem pretty comfortable with the script being the last thing to fall into place, so that's been a source of stress.
A lot of correct me if I'm wrong, but this movie's being released in 3D, correct?
Yeah, we hear. I was walking the set, and the PA was reading something on their iPad, and, oh, look, Disney says.
I'm curious about the decision not to film native.
No, when I was getting involved, I did not want to get into 3D. I'd seen some 3D things that made me unhappy, and on the one side, it was the negatives about not being happy with what I'd seen. The other positives were that I had gone through a brief course with Sony and got really excited about the language that 3D can speak, mm-hmm. and realized that I would have to learn a lot to speak that language. So when I came into this movie, it was very much a 2D movie. And I was kind of relieved that I wasn't going to have to speak a different language I hadn't learned yet. Partway through the process, as is, I guess, common, it was decided mostly for financial reasons, I think. You know, markets are constantly being read to see what is, where the payoff is. So I think the decision was made that it was a good idea to do 3D. So we are, you know, we've heard that partway through. We are aware of it now. I'm not radically changing the way I'm shooting it.
Okay.
We'll see. I mean, I think we have wonderful imagery. I think that's one of the great things about the Marvel Universe is it gives you a chance to play with big, wonderful imagery, which hopefully will be, you know, a pleasure in 3D. But we aren't throwing spears at the camera any more than we were before. we'll see what happens.
I'm curious about from when you got involved with the project to where you are right now. How much has the project shifted along the way in terms of the story you're telling, characters being involved, you know?
The story has shifted a lot. That's part of the roller coaster of having a script that was very much in flux. When I came, they had a first draft by an author. We immediately brought in a new writer and took it in a very different direction. I won't go into details about what we thought of that draft, but it's been a wild and woolly path. Some things were agreed upon very early on, you know, who our villains were going to be, who was going to, what the arc of Jane's relationship was going to be, things like that were pretty much understood from the beginning. But there were characters in it now that were not in it, and I was sort of pushing to bring some people back that weren't originally coming back, and I still consider the script a work in progress.
I definitely have to do a follow up with Joss Whedon being involved in the Marvel Universe, signing this big deal. Did he look at it and give a pass at the script? Or
no, he read a draft, and there is still some hope that he would come in and do some stuff on it for us, sort of under the table, kind of, you know, now that he's is the table. So we're all hoping for that, but nothing has yet. He sort of gave a seal of approval to some things, but we haven't gotten a draft as such from him.
Everyone hears, you know, your name associated with the work you did on Game of Thrones, and they think, oh, that's a perfect fit for Thor. But what was your interest in the character beyond just the fact that you worked in a similar medium before? What drew you into wanting to get into this Marvel comic world?
I think it was partly exactly the things that I found myself enjoying in Game of Thrones. And Game of Thrones was the first fantasy thing I'd done, and like a lot of people who enjoy the show watching it, I didn't expect to respond to that world, but when I started doing it, I really started to love it, started to realize that some of the things I'm naturally drawn to, like a kind of a epic scale imagery that's also grounded in intimate relationships, you know, this is what you could find in Thor as well. And there's this funny thing, I realize that I've been drawn again and again, you know, when I did Deadwood, when I did Rome, I love things that have one foot in history. I was going to be a history professor before I sold out and went into TV. And so things that speak, that evoke that is really exciting to me. And Thor, even though he's a Marvel character, is also obviously deeply rooted in Norse mythology. And you'll see the look of our sets is, you know, deeply embedded or drawn from Norse sources and Celtic sources. And I just love, you know, drawing on past human cultures. That's a thrill for me. I saw Avengers around the time, a rough cut around the time that I was getting involved, and loved the balance of tones that Marvel does, that they can make you really care, and then they can make you laugh at what just happened, and they can, just when you think this is ridiculous, they let you know it's ridiculous, and that's a wonderful dance that they do. I saw some other films recently that only had one of those tones, mm-hmm. and once you get used to the Marvel thing, you sort of miss the other tones. It's funny. I remember seeing Avengers with my very young kids, and the first laugh that came along, it was like they were like liberated. They thought, oh, we're allowed to laugh. They didn't even know that, you know. That's funny.
What kind of production room? There's like so much so many different locations and sets and vehicles and all this stuff. And I was curious, like how do you like because you obviously have, like, you've been on three sets in the last 2 days, and like, you have to switch. There's a lot going on here. How do you decide on what you're going to be getting done and has to get done?
You mean like what? I mean. I think stress was mostly in prep, because then you're worrying about every possible thing. But when you start shooting, you haven't got any choice. You're worried about tomorrow morning. And so that's mostly what you focus on. But, you know, Game of Thrones again, we were shooting Croatia and Belfast and Iceland more or less simultaneously. And so I got used to sort of having attention spread around. But also, you know, we have fantastic designer and I have a fantastic DP and a lot of that stuff you just can start to trust at a certain point.
You talked about you talked about the villains being one of the things you kind of agreed upon right from the get-go. Can you tell us about introducing a new villain like Malekith, and tell us a little bit about what his goals are in this film?
Let's see. It was clear early on that we were going to be dealing with the Dark Elves and that Malekith was going to be our guy. And I'm trying to remember the process by which it evolved. He's very much on a mission of vengeance and on reclaiming what is rightfully his. That's not an unfamiliar device. You know, early on I started thinking that he's got something in common with Roy Batty, you know, who had a righteous mission that you sort of sympathize with, and a kind of humanity, even though he was an evil bastard. And obviously, his name is escaping me, but the bad guy in J.J. Abrams' wonderful Star Trek. Very similar thing, coming back to avenge something. So that sort of came along with him. He started getting more personal. I started being an American. I found myself bringing in some Osama bin Laden into him and stuff. but I think the main... we always knew he was on a task of... I think two things happened. His mission became grander and grander, and we sort of invented a time scale for where he's been and what his backstory is that, in a way, got big enough for Thor. You know, I think other superheroes can fight bad guys in Gotham City or can fight bad guys in Metropolis or whatever, but Thor is part of this epic thing he's also got going on that you sort of, you know, our villains haven't been around for 5,000 years. They've been pissed off since the Big Bang. So there's a kind of scale. You know, Odin's father had to fight them. I liked, again, that sense of history, that sense of scale to what his mission is. But also, on the other end, trying to make it intimate, it's important to me that he have a... You saw him with Adewale, who's playing Algrim, who later becomes Curse. Important to me that he have an intimate relationship, so you felt a kind of brotherly... You know, you've got Thor and Loki, and you've got Algrim, and now I can see have some chance for a kind of intimate connection, so it's not just mustache twirling and blowing things up.
I'm really sorry, guys, but we have to take it.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.